And I hope you can feel it too. I know we're going to be feeling it, I suspect, here anytime now. It is Tuesday, July 8th, 2025, and you're listening and viewing the Hagmann Report right here on Rumble, live on Rumble. Do me a favor, and thank you, Red River Patriot and everyone else mentioning this. Give us a thumbs up, as well as follow on Rumble. That does help our metrics. You know, I say this often. I'll just say this again. 250,000 subscribers at YouTube, and it was, and they were real subscribers, not bots or not fake things or purchased or whatever. And then, of course, when we got unceremoniously booted off there for talking about Pizzagate and some other things, the powers that are attempting to silence the truth. Now, some of the truth tellers that I believe in, I am so thankful to have on our side, on my side. And I got to tell you this, because I have turned down a number of recent, with the upcoming anniversary of July 13th, I have turned down 4 interviews with other stations, entities, programs, big ones, actually. I've turned them down. And I did so for cause, in my mind, for cause. And that is, these places, there is no truth. If it's not their truth, it's not the truth. There's an inherent bias in many of these stations. And I don't take kindly to that. I don't take kindly to lies. And speaking of lies, and I'm just going to end with this. I don't like being lied to. I don't know about you. People I've interviewed professionally, you lie to me, you're done. We have nothing more to talk about. That's the way it is. If you are in the government, I expect you to lie to me. And I expect you to try to convince me that you're telling the truth, but you're lying. I expect that, because it's the government. Sad thing to say, right? But what I don't like is with this Epstein situation, I don't like the absolute, utterly ridiculous lies that I'm hearing. I don't care if it's from Trump's mouth. I don't care if it's from Bondi's mouth. I don't care if it's from Bongino's mouth, Cash Patel. You lie to me. You're dead to me. And I'm getting lied to. We're getting lied to. You and I are getting lied to every day. And what's so special about this Epstein deal? If I told you, I mean, well, I guess I don't have to really throw any metaphors in there. You're talking about a level of depravity, a level of criminality that is unspeakable. You're talking about people who are having illicit sex and worse with minor children. Now, I want you to just think about this one thing. Everyone focuses on Epstein. Everyone focuses on Ghislaine Maxwell. And everyone focuses on Kevin Spacey and these perverts and these people that I wouldn't piss on if they were on fire. Bill Clinton. I want you to think about one thing. That 15, 14, 15, 16-year-old girl. And I've dealt with this in real life. Now, I'm not talking on my ass, okay? I've dealt with this in real life. That young girl, that young boy is somebody's son or daughter. They grew up, their little hand wrapped around the finger of their dad or their mom in some cases. They're victims. So when you tell me that there's nothing to see here, Oh. What are you doing to the victims? What are you doing to the victims' families? Has anyone stopped to consider what is the impact on the victims and the victims' families? Lives ruined, lives shattered. I will always be a proponent for victims, for the children. Shatter Ops. Telling you right now, Shatter Ops does a great job. Save them. Great job. Vets for Child Rescue, Greg's, Craig Sawyer's group. Hearts of gold. They would walk over crushed, broken glass to save a child. Each and every one of them. What's happening with this is an affront to every one of the victims, and especially an affront to the American people. And I want to say this. You can try to twist and justify this and twist yourself up in knots and say, well, you know, I think it's probably what's really happening here. It's probably this big art of the deal thing. Okay. You know what? Go back and take your meds or do something. I don't know. But the truth doesn't need an explanation. The truth is the truth. One stalwart of the truth that I admire and I respect is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. This guy works like, you know, 24 hours, 23 hours a day. He sleeps, I think, upside down maybe for an hour. I don't know. But the guy is a hard worker. John Moore, the Liberty Man, joining me right now. John, how are you, sir?
I am wonderful. If I felt any better, it wouldn't be legal, Doug.
That's my man. I'll tell you all what. Right. It's good to see you.
Good to be here.
Yeah, so I just spent about 4 minutes just complaining. Not complaining, but giving my side of the issue here. I think we've been lied to. I think we've been lied to in a big way. We've been played for suckers. And you know what? I'm done. I'm just done. This is unforgivable because, again, you're looking at, in my view, you're looking at an affront to every victim, every child victim. And you know, they think the American people, what were we stupid? A lot of them are. And I was surprised. I talked to some people who really did not know the extent of the Epstein, situation. I won't even get into it, but, they were shocked to hear some of the stuff that I was explaining and incredulous. You know, the stuff about Bill Barr's father, Epstein, the Democrats, the Republicans, the sex, the perversion. Oh my gosh, that's just a bunch of BS. Oh no, it's proven. But anyway, I could talk for, I can give a 2-hour monologue. I'm not going to do that, to you, sir. Before I go on, I want to say thank you to Scott in India, from Indiana, for your email. You're 100% right. But go ahead, John.
You want to start with Epstein?
Well, let's kind of finish this out. Everyone's talking about it. The bottom line here is we, in my view, we've been lied to, and we've been lied to and said and told to accept it, and too bad for you and too bad for the victims. That's my view. There's no explanation. You cannot explain your way out of this. I don't care if you're Dan Bongino behind a microphone, pounding your fist, blustering and say, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And they come out and he's holding his Johnson in his hand, apparently, because I don't know. But I've lost all kinds of respect for a lot of people over the last several months. And I'm not going to go to my grave allowing victimization of this caliber to continue. And I'll just leave it there to you, sir.
Okay. Well, I'm not in a position to do any investigation personally on what went on with Epstein. I'm hoping that some independent journalists are doing various methods, such as getting records from these entities that can be gotten. FOIA requests, for example. If there is a lawsuit, the power of subpoena is very powerful. Judicial Watch may get, I don't know if Judicial Watch is doing anything, but
yes, they are.
I would expect so. So it looks like the feds, at least for the time being, aren't going to do anything that we're aware of. And if Judicial Watch comes up with something, I will certainly applaud that. Maybe some other group, but Judicial Watch probably has the best chance. We have on the table, Doug, that these victims, these young, these girls, and I assume some boys all were victims of this. They'll be located and attempts will be made to make them whole again. This went on for many, many years. And as I mentioned before the show started, I have a private source on the East Coast that told me two things. It's confirmation of what we already know, that Jeffrey Epstein is alive and that he was and probably still is a Mossad agent. And apparently there is some conflict between the CIA and Mossad on this particular topic, with the CIA being very, at least at some level, with the Epstein matter, where it's being handled publicly, at least.
So if Epstein is alive, and let's just surmise that, okay, for the purpose of this discussion, that had to be conducted. His extraction had to be conducted at a nation state level. You're not going to get a gang of four or five, people to extract him from that facility in that fashion and think you're going to get away with it. You're not going to. And don't give me this shit about the cameras. You know, 1 minute every night, 1 minute, the cameras go down because it's an old system from the 90s. Okay, bite me. Are you out of your flipping mind, Pam Bondi? I don't know how many people caught that. Folks, all of these, everything I'm referring to, I urge you just go to Hagman PI in the show notes, along with John's website, thelibertyman.com, and you can catch his radio show too every weekday morning. But the link will be in the program notes at HagmanPI.com underneath the title of our nice show. But I am absolutely over this because I know on our end, we work hard. Shatter Ops, Russ's reformatted team, save them. The international part of Russ's team. So Shatter Ops and save them along. I mean, we do a lot for child rescue. And, I don't want to leave Craig Sawyer out of this because his team does just a fantastic job. But, you know, we know what we have found. And I'm going to, one more thing, John, and then I'm going to turn you loose, because I'm just getting really, really twisted about this. The book that's coming out, my book that will be coming out anytime now, deals with the blowback. And I feel like I've been here before. Because when you start pushing on child pornography, child trafficking, and child sexual crimes, folks, let me tell you something. You will take on incoming from places you never thought would come from. And I'm talking back in 1987, 1988. And John, I don't know whether you know this, but I was, after working a child sex case, because this case, and this is what my next book is about, or the upcoming book is about, because it involved higher level individuals in the state government. A couple still alive, because so I had to change names, but I was facing 99 years in prison. Now, I wasn't charged with that. I was threatened with 99 years in prison. I was threatened with criminal charges. I'm not going to get into it, but the bottom line is there's a lot at stake here. And all we need are the right people to do the right thing. All right, John, I'm sorry. I just had to say that, get this off my chest, because it was bothering me all day. But you take it from here, my friend.
Okay, well, I'm personally not going to be devoting any time except observing as opposed to making use of any investigative skills. And I keep track of Judicial Watch's activities, and hopefully they'll get some resolution. What we're looking at, it's mostly speculation as to what individuals went there, what they did while they were there, what happened to the victims and so forth. So I'll pay attention to it as best I can while I'm working on other matters, Doug. And
okay. All right. And, fair enough. Because we have to, you know what, this is what I like about John Moore. He state, you know, we all have our emails to read, our own emails, or we have, you read your own mail, stay in your lane. If you're good at one thing and you're intent on one thing, then by all means, man, follow that line, follow that pursuit, or keep pursuing what you're after. And that's what I like about you, because you can actually silo your various parts of, or various information stuff that you have to deal with. So okay, thank you for that.
Okay,
I'll shut up now. All right.
Well, okay.
That's okay. The fifth time I said that.
That's okay, Doug. Well, I give a prepper tip of the day every day of the week, Monday through Friday. This is only maybe the second or third time that I'm giving the same prepper tip of the day every day this week. It has to do with Dr. Michael Yaden, PhD, and a one-hour video he did titled Final Warning at my website at thelibertyman.com. Good panel in red letters. None of the other videos are in red letters. This one is. A friend of mine has created links to all the sites that Michael Yaden talks about in the videos. They'll be clickable links. They should be there. If they're not there already, they should be there in a day or so. People do their own independent research. When it comes to the consequences of the COVID vaccination clot shot, as with many things involving science and medicine, people are looking for credentials, looking for credibility. So it's one thing, and more, Doug Hagman says something about the COVID vaccinations. It's another thing altogether if somebody with the credentials of Dr. Michael Yaden, PhD, says something of any kind. So who is Dr. Michael Yaden? Well, he goes by Mike. So while you take a look at this, there's a man who spent his adult life indoors. He's a nerd. He's a Brit, no doubt about it. But we need guys like this. We need most of their lives in research on their various projects. Mike Yaden was a vice president at Pfizer. Mike Yaden was director of medical research on issues involving the lungs and allergies. It's a pretty short list, Doug, of men and women with that level of credentials, very short list worldwide, and he's on that list. Michael Yaden says, in no uncertain terms, that all of the COVID vaccinations were meant to kill and hurt people. He's no ifs, ands, or buts. All the COVID vaccinations were meant to hurt and kill people. A very up. In that one-hour interview, he segued into areas not related to COVID vaccinations, where he basically tells us that we've been lied to all our lives about things like various illnesses, cold, vaccines in general. And it's well an hour of your time, ladies and gentlemen, to watch that one-hour presentation. It's just Mike Yaden talking to the camera. He's not being interviewed by anybody. If he's reading from notes, it's not obvious. he may have been reading from some kind of screen in front of him, but it's not obvious. He seems to be being pretty extemporaneous in his presentation.
We do have that video that you're referencing, and we'll put it in the show notes at HagmanPI.com for today's episode. Do you want to play the first couple of minutes, or you want to
spoil
let us know.
The first is where he's going to talk about it and his credentials. Before we do that, Doug, I don't at a Red Cross, a donation Steelville, Missouri. I talked to the man and one of his assistants before I left, and I asked these two guys, do you think they'll stop accepting blood from people with COVID vaccination 40 years out? And they looked at me like I had two heads. And I said, you guys don't know what's coming. They said, well, I told them about Mike Yaden. I told them about my radio show. I told them about the 1 hour presentation. And, they both acted like they would check it out and look it up. Right now, the things that you cannot give blood if you've had malaria, if you've had various diseases, but they still accept blood from men and women who've taken the COVID vaccination, which I believe is proven to be contaminated by multiple things that people put in their bodies unknowingly, unwittingly. Sure, let's play the first 3 minutes or so of Yaden's presentation, where he gives his statement, why he's doing it, and his credentials.
All right. It sounds good, Eric, the tech. And by the way, you mentioned about the blood issue. It's interesting because when I was in the hospital last week, there was a whole bunch of forms that you got to look at and sign, initial, whatever. And something had to do with blood transfer or something like that. I said, look, if I need blood, I want you to take every ounce, every liquid ounce out of Eric the Tech. Okay. As opposed to anyone else. No, it's got to be, you drain Eric the Tech and put my blood into him, if you know, or whatever is left. But I agree with you too on this blood situation. It's hard for me to believe that people are not thinking in that at that level. But okay, Eric the Tech, go ahead and hit the first couple of minutes of this video. Important.
I assume most people have not heard of me. Most people. I am a lifetime research scientist. I worked for 32 years in the pharmaceutical industry and biotech. My most senior positions were at Pfizer. I was vice president and worldwide head of research in allergic and respiratory diseases. Since 2020, I have been speaking out against the fraudulent pandemic and the intentionally dangerous injections. And my experience has been to have been censored and smeared largely. So if you've not heard of me before, that's the reason, that censorship and smearing is the experience of people who try and tell you true things that the authorities don't want you to hear.
The film is Final Warning.
Not because I'm, got nothing to say, but I think I've said enough that if anyone's looking at what I've said or is looking for me, they can find me easily enough. And if they're not, putting out another 10 videos or 100 videos is not going to reach them. So I think there'll be things for me to do. I think this could easily be a year of major change, but I can't see the point in doing that much more, frankly. I've done over 300 video and audio interviews, and I'm more concerned than I was in 2020, 21. I'm more certain, unfortunately. I wish I wasn't. I'm more certain of the tentative concerns I had then. I've got a much better understanding of the history behind what I call the nonsense, the 2020 lies, of the not pandemic, and to inject people with the not vaccines. Yep. I got a much better understanding of all of the work that's preceded it. When I first spoke, when I did a major interview in 2021, I was at that point sure that there wasn't a pandemic, or at least whatever was happening had been deliberately and through planning exaggerated to frighten people. And I focus very much, because of my history as a research executive in pharma for over 30 years, I was very concerned about the injections, because I knew there wasn't a public health threat. So why would you want to be injected? My thinking has advanced quite a lot since then, which I may talk about later in this interview, but it's not possible for the injections to be of help to anybody. It's literally not possible. Every medicine, every molecule and atom and constituent of every medicine is in there because somebody chose to put it in there. Hopefully for good reasons, but they put it in there for a purpose, to stabilize something or make it big enough to swallow in the form of a tablet. If you just have the active ingredients in some drugs, it's too small to see. So you need to formulate it with it, what are called excipients. So, but when I spoke before, I could see multiple features in the so-called vaccines that was not necessary. Even if I believe the lies that about what I was being told about these things, even if you believe them, it would not be necessary to incorporate certain features about them. And so my bottom line is, I think, and I'm well qualified to make this claim, probably better qualified than any other single person speaking out, they have been designed intentionally to injure, kill, and reduce fertility. I've never claimed it would do it to a lot of people, or that it would be quick. In fact, specifically, I remember saying at the time, I don't think they want to risk injuring and killing too many people early on, because people will spot it. What I expected once I started looking around and noticing other things, like there was a talk of electronic money, getting rid of cash, and there was a talk of digital ID. I remember Tony Blair trying to do that in the 90s. And frankly, I joined the dots, and I could see a world in which you were required to have digital ID, that cash was removed, so you had to spend only using digital money. And I thought, you know what, if I was the evil person, I would say that your digital ID will not be valid unless you're up to date with your injections. And I came across a document from the EU. It's called EU Vabeco, V-A-B-E-C-O. And it's a scheme that started in 2018. Bottom line is, the EU Commission anticipates a future in which every EU citizen has a digital ID whose validity is governed by whether or not they've been injected with the latest mRNA-based, quote, vaccine.
So can you pause that for a second? Thanks. You can leave that up. John, you just... whenever you want it to stop, you just direct it. Okay. Just have it stop.
Well,
it,
okay? I got a comment on something I said earlier. The two Red Cross workers that where I donated blood today, I mentioned to them that I do private consultations. I had two doctors come from the East Coast neighborhood for their consultation. The doctors mentioned a patient of theirs who works for one of the three COVID vaccination manufacturers. And this patient told the doctors, my consultation clients, that he'd been on the vaccine for 6 years before it was released. Well, these two men, they looked at each other, they looked at me and said, well, it doesn't quite fit the timeline that we know. And I said, no, of course not. It doesn't. So my statement is the following. How could something be experimental if you worked on it for 6 years? Obviously, the public story is it only took 9 months to create the COVID vaccination. Well, it was not 9 months. It was 6 years at least that we know of, at least that I know of. I can't statement, Doug, that this is the worst crime in human history. The previous worst crime would be Mao Zedong murdering at least 50 Chinese to take over China, if you count the people who starved to death. And, that number will be exceeded by vaccination consequences. What I think is Bobby Kennedy and the men and women he works with want to avoid mass hysteria. I think that's a goal of theirs, probably in coordination with some psychological professionals. So, and this is just my speculation based on being, you know, having lived a lot of life, that if they... their feeling would be that if they told the entire population to immediately stop all vaccinations for all people, the people would figure out real quick that they shouldn't have done it twice. So they've started with boys and girls 18 years older are no longer required to get the vaccination. Pregnant women are not recommended to get it anymore. I believe they will expand that to 60, and then last but not least, men and women older than the age of 60 to no longer be recommended to get the COVID. I find it curious that they use the term not recommended for healthy children under the age of 18, as if you would give this to somebody who had comorbidities and who's already at risk of harm from anything because they're already sick. I find that statement rather unique and unusual.
Good point. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as I've said before, and if I'm repeating myself, I'm not going to ask for any apologies or to give an apology. We have 1,300 counties in the United States. As far as I know, each of those counties has a health chart, some big, some small. Department will be a short walk or a short drive away from the offices of the sheriff's department and the prosecuting attorney, also known as district attorney, depending on the county. The job of the sheriff's department and the prosecutor, sheriff's department is to investigate crimes and make arrests if a crime has been committed. The job of the prosecuting attorney is to prosecute men and women who have committed crimes. Now, if you're injecting what's clearly, in my opinion, poison into people's arms that's causing serious bodily injury or death, clearly people doing those injections are committing crimes, in my opinion. Refreshing people. Back in the 1970s, we had something called the swine flu vaccine. My wife at the time, my first wife, room worker, I really don't need that because I was going to get. She says, you don't need that. There was just a very few people, maybe 6 or 20 or so, died from the swine flu vaccine. They shut down the whole thing nationwide. Many people died, or a few people died, but I know men and women, you may know some also, that are still alive. They're still suffering from the swine flu vaccine that they got more than half a century ago. Now, that was the right thing to do. A few people die, you shut it down. Now we've had literally hundreds of thousands of people dying. Many, probably a million or more, have been injured. Top athletes, soccer players and tennis players and others, while they're playing their favorite sport. Just a call yesterday from a friend on the coast. He said that a neighbor was walking through his yard and fell over dead. The doctors determined he had a blockage to his heart. I don't know if it's vaccine related, but I think there's a high likelihood it was. I've interviewed the workers at, we have 3 funeral homes in my county, Crawford County, Missouri. And women who work at the 3 funeral homes. A friend of mine, a deputy sheriff in Mississippi, at my request, has done the same thing with the funeral homes in his county. And we workers in both Missouri in Crawford County, and in this county in Mississippi, I'll say the following. Beginning the spring of 2021, around March or so, there's been a doubling of funerals in both of our counties. This is from my personal investigation and from the investigation of a friend of mine, a deputy sheriff in Mississippi. I believe any further investigation without any confirmation will find pretty much the same thing in all 3,300 counties in the United States, that funerals have almost doubled since the spring of 2021 as a direct consequence of the COVID vaccination. Doug, we've gone through wars. We've gone through the Spanish flu in 1918. In the history of this country, which there's a fun side of this too, I'll get to in a moment. There's never been a doubling of funerals in this country ever before. And there's no in the alternative media. There's virtually no attention. Now, we're supposed to be celebrating the 250th year of 2026, Doug, right?
2026, correct.
Right. Now, if you have, or let's say something simple, if you have one ink pen in front of you, you need to have 10, you would get 9 more, right? 9 more ink pens?
Well, unless you went to Common Core, took Common Core math, then you might only need 2. But okay. Go on.
Well, if the first year of our country was 1776, you would need 249 years to get to 250, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm following. I'm tracking. Okay.
That's year 2025. I'm right. Just think about it.
Wait. I said I was tracking. Maybe
think
I
about
wasn't.
It. Think okay. about it. You got one ink pen. You need to have 10. So you add 9 to that one to get 10.
Right.
If you have first year is 1776.
Okay.
And you want to get to 250, you add 249 to that first year.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
We're already at 200.
Right now. Okay, I do understand what you're saying. You're counting, for example, when you use a date-to-date calendar, and many people have done this, there's always a question there. Do you want to include, you know, the starting date and the ending date in your calculation? So that's what you're doing, is you're including the entirety of the year 1776, using that as year one as opposed to year zero. I get that. Okay.
Right,
okay.
Right. Well, the same, I don't know how many years are existed are calculating budgets and federal agencies, aren't they?
Yep. Yeah.
It's good to have a little humor in this, but that's my reality. Anyway, Doug, I've had my neighbor. Now my neighborhood is in the national. Majority of my neighborhood is part of the National Forest, Mark Twain National Forest. Maybe out of the 10 square miles of my zip code, 65456, we may have 400 people or so, which is an apartment building in Washington, D.C. My zip code is about the size of Washington, D.C., 10 square miles. But despite our low number, we've had... two friends of mine have died. One was a leader of a well-known rock and roll band, Poco. He took the clot shot. He drove his Porsche to one of these drive-through clinics, arm out the window, got the clot shot. 32 days later, he's dead. Another friend of mine, a veteran, a member of the American Legion, he was our treasurer at our American Legion, he told me that he wanted to give psychological support to his sister who had to get the clot shot to keep her job. So to give her psychological support, he got the clot shot also. Over the next year, my wife and I watched his physical condition change, his mental condition change. He started getting shakes in his hands and arms that could not be controlled. And there were changes in his personality that were obviously going on. The post told me one day she hadn't seen Jesse in all week, and he's normally never pick up his man. So I told her, I guess I better go check on him. I picked up my wife. I went to his house. This was a couple of years. It was 2 years ago, earlier this spring. Drove up to his house. His vehicle was there. Walked up to the picture window of his I saw he was dead, obviously dead. And I called his wife. I called the sheriff's department and waited until the authorities got there before I left. Another neighbor, he got the clot shot. About 10 days, 14 days later, the helicopter ambulance, his heart beating 300 times a minute. And since then, he's had a surgical procedure where they basically gave him a shot to the part of the heart that allows it to beat times a minute, so it can't do that anymore. And he had no idea what he'd done to himself getting a clot shot, no idea whatsoever, which is true of most people. They have what's called blind faith. Now, in this case, blind faith makes sense, Doug, for the following reason. All vaccines, whether it's measles, or flu, or whatever it might be, have a package insert with that little bottle. It's a 2x2 foot. It says the following. It says what the ingredients are. It tells what the proper dosage is for your age. It tells what the vaccine is supposed to do, and it gives the side effects. The COVID vaccination package inserts, the 2x2 foot piece of paper, in large block letters in the middle of that 2x2 foot piece of paper, said the intentionally left blank. So the clinicians, the doctors, the nurses all took out that that package insert, put it on the counter, and gave the vaccines anyway to the unwitting, unknowing people who rolled up their sleeves either out of ignorance or because they were given no choice, which brings up the Nuremberg war crime tribunals and what's called the Nuremberg Code. At the end of World War II, scientists, doctors, and German military people were put on trial, which included the forced surgeries, the forced medical procedures that were given to people who had no choice because they were prisoners in the concentration camps. The Nuremberg Code says the following: give any medicine or medical procedure to any person without informed consent first.
Right.
How can you give informed consent if the package insert is blank? You obviously can't do that. If you're being told by your employer, get the vaccine or you'll be fired, that's coercion. If you're in the military and until you get the vaccine or your career is over, that's coercion. Both of these are obviously, clearly violations of the Nuremberg Code. I started talking about this as soon as the vaccine was being or even before, about violation of the Nuremberg Code, which once again, the mainstream media basically completely ignores, Doug. Completely.
Okay, well, about that. So here's my take on this. We are looking at one of the worst crimes in world history. Okay, as you said, I agree. Now, for the sake of the victims, again, the victims, we need accountability. We need justice. Who do we have right now working on our behalf, on behalf of the victims, on behalf of the people who have been injured, killed, on behalf of their families? Okay, you've got Fauci running around. You've got Ralph Baric running around. You've got people from various institutions, universities. You've got politicians. You've got politicians. Everyone from the executive office to governors to, I mean, you name it. You know, hey, you want, oh, this got a burger element to it or a fry element, whatever that was. What a bunch of crap. When are we going to see, anyone brought to account, brought to justice for this absolute, I can't use the words because I would be yelled at. Where's the justice, my friend?
Well, I don't have a timeline as to your first round, but as to who's going to do it, what Bobby Kennedy Jr. and the men and women he's working with are doing are laying the scientific groundwork that could be used as evidence. The various state's attorneys, probably 17 or 19 state's attorneys that can do criminal prosecutions against the people at the NIH, the CDC, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, Now, civil prosecution is a bit more problematic because of various legal obstacles put in the way to give freedom from civil prosecution for the various vaccine manufacturers. That's probably, there may be ways around it. I'm not aware of them yet. So, I have a high level of confidence that state's attorney generals will do the right thing. There's probably 17 or 19 of them. So probably already doing the research right now without having the indictments. They're probably already doing the research right now as to gathering evidence which will lead to hopefully some grand jury indictments and or outright prosecutions from these states' attorney generals. Once criminal charges are filed, then, as you and I well know, something very special is given to these attorney generals, the power of subpoena. When I first figured out as a young investigator back in 1973, actually before that, I was working on a federal antitrust lawsuit, the power of subpoena is only what we can do. And secret files of Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson under penal law once the subpoena has been issued. The secret...
I don't mean to interrupt you, but haven't we seen... Okay, so the power of... you and I have executed subpoenas. I mean, I'm sure... I know I have. You have as well. However, look what we saw with... Again, to bring go back to Epstein. Well, hey, despite the... a warehouse full of evidence, there's nothing here. So even with the power of a subpoena, to me, it's like you combine that with the PREP Act that shields the pharmaceutical manufacturers from the financial risk in the event of a public health emergency like they declared. You're peeing up a rope. They could say, well, we don't have anything. And who do you turn to for the criminal prosecution?
There's two parts of power. You know, there's regular subpoenas, which are for human beings, and subpoena deuces take are records and documents.
Correct.
Now, there may or may not be, I obviously don't know, attempts to conceal or destroy documentary evidence. That's one thing. The other is the subpoena of individuals. And in the case of criminal prosecution, individuals, and I've seen this and you've seen it dozens of times also, at the bottom with the low-level laboratory workers, with the low administrative executives, have been firsthand witnesses to the higher level people making decisions and doing things that were clearly illegal, cutting deals. Sir, Mr. Jones, would you like to get a suspended sentence or spend 10 years in a federal prison? Your choice. You either help us or do 10 years of hard time in a federal prison. Typically, people will speak their what needs to be spoken and say what needs to be said in order to avoid hard jail time. That's the way our system works, and typically it works quite well that way.
Let me just say this. That's the way our system was designed to work.
Yes, sir.
I have no faith right now that we have a functional justice system. The only thing I know, we have a legal system, and that legal system protects the corporate billionaires. It protects the people. It protects the wrong people and leaves us, you and me, everyone in the chat, everyone listening to this, everyone watching this, holding our butt cheeks, you know, open and saying, hey, do it to me again. You know, no lube required. That's what I think the system is right now. Because if we had a fair system, we would have absolute 100% transparent inquiries into exactly who, what, when, where, and how. And of course, we know the why. But we would have the inquiries done. We would have arrests made. We would have public trials. And then we would have public executions. But you know what? To me, this is a pipe dream, because we have lost that, and we have allowed that to be lost by not standing up. And I'll tell you something. I'm about ready to stand up and say no more, no more. But go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, your analysis is certainly accurate for some jurisdictions, but not all jurisdictions.
Talk to me about that then. Okay.
Well,
tell me where I can move to get that kind of justice.
Well, I know in Crawford County you would, because I know the and the prosecutor firsthand. You know, I have dinner with the prosecutor once a month, and he's a smart guy. He's a tough guy, former cop, and I still have jurisdictions to do the things for the right reasons. In the red states, where you don't get to be a judge unless you're a conservative Christian patriot. At least it's very difficult. Same thing with the generals in the various red states. You used to be an attorney general in many of these red states, including mine, unless you're a conservative Christian patriot. It's just simply not going to happen. So share your concern.
So it's the opposite of the inside the Beltway in D.C. then, right?
Obviously.
Okay.
Obviously. In fact, Donald Trump is making some statements that he's prepared to take over, have the federal government take over Washington, D.C., which is a world nightmare, basically, is what it's become. It's really an embarrassment. Different story for a different day. So my belief is that several, and I mentioned 17 or 19, that's about how many conservative red states I believe will move forward with criminal prosecutions against individuals with NIH, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson, and with criminal indictments.
Okay, so wait a minute, for the people out there, and for me too, what would it take, John, to create a case in your jurisdiction where you've got some great judges, great prosecutors, people that follow the law? What kind of evidence does it take to enact a case, a prosecution, criminal prosecution? I'm thinking if a civil prosecution does arise, perhaps there would be a criminal element to that. There could be. I mean, one is not connected to the other. Of course, I know that, but one could rise and lead to perhaps a criminal pursuit. But what would it take? What kind of evidence is needed? We have, or don't we have sufficient evidence of absolute wrongdoing in the intent? Go ahead.
It's no matter what in the public domain. First of all, at the local level, my county prosecutor doesn't have the resources to engage in that kind of activity. It's a massive undertaking requiring serious resource of attorneys, paralegals, legal secretaries, and investigators. So it would have to be at least in as far as maybe some jurisdictions, but typically the state attorney general would have to commence an investigation at the local level, documenting men and women who have been harmed and killed by the COVID vaccinations. That would involve interviewing coroners, from doctors, from nurses, and the living victims, of course. Moving on from there, they would be able to possibly issue indictments to individuals who were personally involved in giving these vaccinations, possibly unwittingly. Intentionally, it's obviously a murder. If you kill somebody but didn't intend slaughter. So, in my opinion, every man and woman, every doctor, every clinic, every nurse, every person,
every pharmacist, that's right,
who was involved in distributing these COVID vaccinations, health departments, could be manslaughter. I doubt that very many are doing in terms of causing harm with intent. But if they were directly involved in people being injured and dying, if they're involved in, I should say, that's manslaughter. And they could and should be charged with manslaughter. Yeah, and I wouldn't be so interested in getting convictions of your local nurse, your local doctor on manslaughter. I would be interested in statements and having them give me evidence that could be against Pfizer, evidence it could be against Moderna and against Johnson & Johnson and against scientists at the state level with the state health department who recommended that these vaccinations be given. Men and women who have a personal responsibility to determine the safety of anything they recommend. Blindly following the lead of the CDC, the NIH, and the manufacturers of the vaccines. It's a massive undertaking, the likes of which the closest we can come may be the tobacco companies. A massive undertaking that, once again, will take years and deep resources to pursue to get to resolution, Doug.
Which, and I'll just say this, because of that justice delayed is justice denied. I have a problem with that. In other words, okay, if you are a district attorney, and given the scenario that you painted, if you're a district attorney and you're convinced that this substance, this clot shot, was a delivery mechanism of death and disability, and people knew about that, and this happened within your purview, within your jurisdiction, then it's not just your right as a district attorney, but your responsibility to pursue that.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely.
It is.
But yet I'm not seeing all. I'm not either.
I'll tell you why. Well, first of all, these district attorneys and prosecuting attorneys. And until the death and serious bodily becomes mainstream public awareness, they're not going to do anything to will jeopardize their career and their position. They simply aren't going to do it. That's human nature, and it's not going to happen, unfortunately. I don't like it either. But that's my reality is elected officials are not going to jeopardize their career until it becomes mainstream and they have no choice. But between now and then, they're going to keep quiet, follow the direction of the state health department and the CDC and the NIH as to what they do or don't do. It's an unfortunate reality, but it is reality, and you and I aren't going to change it, Doug.
Now, I do know that there are some investigations. In fact, I'm looking here because I did take some notes about this. Let me see real quick if I can find this. With respect to the injections and how they were rolled out and rather than waste time and babbling here, there are some measures being taken, it's my understanding, to go after the individuals responsible for the clearing or the approval of this, of the clot shot, the death jab, slab jab. And it's at that level that they're looking, I want to say the Attorney General's office. I'll leave it there. But yes, I do see some movement, but I'm not holding my breath and I'm not optimistic, but go ahead.
Well, I've been at this a long time. The COVID, it called it coronavirus initially. I was on my first and probably only Caribbean cruise in January of 2020 when this thing went public here in the United States. I must admit, at first I thought, I was making mental notes about the protective equipment I had at home once I got back from the cruise and so forth. But pretty quickly, it became really evident that something was really wrong, a coronavirus, and the measures being used. For example, I can give some examples. The 6-foot distancing. I heard and I satisfaction were the six from. It was the female high school student daughter of somebody who works at the NIH wrote a term about 6 foot distancing being and with a communicable disease spread by through the air. He thought, well, this is great. We'll make it a nationwide mandate. No science, no evidence, just a term paper written by a high school student. That turned out to be true. The mask wearing, right on the package from the manufacturer, it says it's not going to protect you from any disease or illness. So,
yeah.
Who knows more about what will and will not do than the people who make it? Obviously, you know, that's the people who have the best of what a mask will or will not do. And then mandates coming out of various city officials, state officials. I've seen a video. It was pretty widely distributed at the time. A woman was at a high school outdoor athletic activity, and she was chased down and arrested by a security officer for not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
The church service, which took place in an open field where people were in their automobiles with the windows rolled up, the air conditioning going, service on their radios, that was shut down by the police.
Yep. Yep.
Memphis.
And let me just jump in here. Why did we allow that? In other words, okay, if this whole maddening thing, even folks, you remember this. You remember Tim Walz is the governor sending out the National Guard. You're standing on your porch and you get beamed or you get hit by a essentially a paint bullet for standing on your porch because of the curfews of COVID and the national. You saw the videos, folks. I'm sure you
right.
did. Okay. So take the police, you know, tackling people without wearing masks and doing all this crazy crap. This happened, I believe, John, because there are two parts to this, to specific parts, I believe. The first part is the programming, the behavioral programming by the government through the mainstream media or the legacy media. That's number one. That instilled fear, and that fear caused compliance by the otherwise reasonable and sensible individuals. Because when you have fear overtake your limbic system, essentially it's a flight or fight thing. But the bottom line is you lose critical thinking. So that's the programming part, the installation of fear. And the second part is those people who were awake allowed it. I'm going to tell you right now, if somebody would have done that in front of me, I would have intervened, probably to my peril. But I would have intervened. No, you're not, you know, gonna do this. No, I'm not, because I never wore a mask in a store. If somebody wanted me to wear a mask in a store, screw you. End of story. I'm not doing it. I'm not playing your fantasy game. And we have the same thing happening today across the landscape. In my view, people are just they're gone, man. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in people who are falling for the BS. But go on, sir. Go on.
A couple more examples. West Memphis, Tennessee, has all kinds of casinos right across the river in Arkansas from Memphis. West Memphis, Arkansas is what I meant to say. Right across the river from Memphis, Tennessee. So you could drive down the road there and see the casino parking lots full while on Sunday morning were empty. So the churches while leaving the casinos right down the street open.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? Now, I had an idea and I decided to turn it over to a friend of mine, my friend Tim Spencer, who's now deceased, to manufacture and sell mosquito netting. And he hired three Filipino women married to American men there in Salem, Missouri. They manufactured and sold thousands, many thousands of mosquito net masks in various colors, some with sparkles on them. Others were different colors, and one was camouflage. And they had enough fabric fingers that you could cover your entire face from your chin to your eyebrows if you chose to. So I like to have fun with this. I was at a speaking event in Dallas. I had at the Hilton Hotel. And so I go to check in, and I'm not wearing a mask. And the clerk says, well, sir, I can't check you unless you wear a mask. I said, really? He says, really? He said, yeah. I said, really? I said, you're not going to check me in. I got reservation. No, I can't do it. I'm just going to. And I covered up my entire face from my chin to my eyebrows. He got real quiet and checked me in.
Yeah, I guess that's one way. However, I like your humor, but again.
Here's more humor. My dentist would lose his license if his patients didn't wear a mask. So I had a dental appointment. I took one of those paper masks, and I 1-inch tall letters across the front of it, OBEY, obey.
And there you go.
And I went to my dental appointment. Mask, by the way, had a hole cut where my mouth was cut out, a big opening in the mask. I wore that sometimes also. So I wore the mask with the opening. Another time I was going to donate blood. They were getting a blood draw for a blood test. That's right. At one of the local hospitals. So I, and there's a sign saying, everybody over age 3 has to wear a mask. I took the mask off the counter. I put it on my forearm, and I said to the clerk, I said, identify as a 3-year-old. And I spent my time in the hospital clinic with a mask on my forearm. Nobody said anything.
Yeah, I mean, look, and again, this insanity continues today, and this speaks to, in my view, although this sounds like, okay, well, we know all of this, this is old information, this speaks to a current problem, because just like in the time period of COVID, when it was okay to some people to be, you know, wearing a plastic bag and hugging grandma through armholes, and, you know, grandma at the insistence of Cuomo and other governors, you know, had to be put into nursing homes to die.
That was a crime.
That was and is a crime. And I certainly expect manslaughter charges to be leveled against the people. But, oh, wait. Huh, this is the same Department of Justice that says, nah, you know, everything's fine, Epstein, there's nothing there. Okay, yeah, dream on. But so it's going to have to be, I believe it's going to have to be done at a state level by somebody with balls and somebody with integrity.
Well, it's not just that. That's why my local prosecuting attorney does not have the resources to pursue something of this magnitude. It takes serious resources of, as I mentioned earlier, attorneys, paralegals, legal secretaries, and investigators, basically working full time. They're not going to be doing anything else. This will become their full time job. I know my first job when I was working as a paralegal for the American Association, we got involved as defendants in a federal antitrust lawsuit. My normal routine as a paralegal basically came to a stop, and I did nothing else. I got my very own question that I had to respond to, and basically spent month after month just one question, as a consequence, I decided to go a different route with my career, which worked out pretty good for me. So it takes deep resources to go after Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, members of the federal government. It takes deep to do that. And many of these state attorney generals have the financial wherewithal to do that and power, people power to do that. And it needs to happen. If it will, your statement about justice delayed is justice denied. Well, there's no doubt about that. This could have happened early on in the spring of 2021. The spring of 2020. I get it right, John. The spring of 2020, And there's it's on my website at thelibertyman.com, 8-minute audio clip where I make two statements in that 8 minutes. First of all, a safe and effective vaccine released to public after only 9 months, a true statement. My second statement, which no evidence at the time, but we now have evidence, the vaccines were already in refrigerators waiting. We now know that's correct, that the vaccines were already in refrigerators in the spring of 2020 waiting to be released because they've been developed for years and years before. The magnitude of this crime is hard to calculate. I brought up the tobacco lawsuits, which ended up in tens of millions of dollars changing hands. It's hard to calculate the financial outcome from the size of these magnitude of these people being killed and injured. It will literally be, if not trillions of dollars, that will cost to compensate, if it ever happens, Doug, which that remains to be seen if there's ever any compensation for the people that have lost their lives and have been permanently injured by the change. And right now, on the 8th day of July, people will into clinics and hospitals and doctor's offices got the COVID vaccination, and they'll do the same thing tomorrow on the 9th. The deaths and the permanent injuries continue, don't they, Doug?
Yeah, yes. I want to bring this up before, excuse me, before I forget about this. Marla Maples, many people know her, obviously, as being President Trump's ex-wife, was interviewed recently by James O'Keefe, she revealed in that interview, I don't know if you saw this, John, and folks, I don't know if you saw this out there, where she was at one time tailed, surveilled by the CIA after a deep state whistleblower exposed the slab jab rollout to her. Okay, in other words, she got like the scoop as it was happening or just before it was happening. The interview, again, I think it's at the, I think it's on O'Keefe's website, but the spying by the CIA. So when you have all of these elements of criminal activity, here's, John, I got to go back to this. Here's what I don't get, because you and I have been in the investigative business. I think if we combine our years, it's probably a close
approaching a century. No.
A century, right. So I know this, okay? Back a number of years ago, my district or the district attorney just loved me when I took in a video. For example, if I took a statement or if I took something that proved beyond a shadow of a doubt of a criminal action, and I was able to authenticate it, and I laid it down on his desk. And I remember a couple of times, and one time he said, come on, man, I'm buying you lunch, because they didn't have to do a damn thing in terms of investigation. All they had to do was call me in to authenticate the evidence that I gave them. That's not, you know, yay me. That's to say there's enough evidence out there that people have, whether it's at whatever level that we're talking about, there's enough evidence to prosecute, but you've got to be willing to prosecute. And I don't see that anywhere. Again, I know we're rehashing things, but you know, we've got to become not sheep, not little wimps, but lions that roar and alligators that will put the subject into a death roll or whatever. But we've got to strike out and say, okay, this bullshit's going to stop. Your criminal activities are going to be punished. We have to go after these people. And somehow, some way, my brother, we've got to. What can we do? I mean, what can we do to convince? I mean, gather up all of the evidence and of Marla Maples and you know, the coroners. I mean, do we have to go out and interview the coroners? Let's do it. Do we have to go out and interview the coroner? Let's do it.
Well, I've already, actually, I have a woman who was a coroner or up until 6 months ago when she decided not to run for re-election. And she's very about the consequences of clot shot. It's going to be, to answer your question, it's going to be personal connection, personal communication with men and or women who are in a position to move forward with these prosecutions. And I would suggest at the state's attorney general's level, not at the local prosecutor level. You're going to, if you happen to have a personal relationship with a state's attorney, have lunch with that person and talk about their thoughts, what they're aware of, what they're not aware of. And if they're not aware, make them aware. From the evidence that will be clear and convincing, such as Mike Yaden's video.
Yes.
Very, very serious credibility. You know, if Alex Jones or myself or you talk about this, that's good. It's important. But when the former vice president at Pfizer vaccinations are meant to kill and hurt people, that's what I evidence, don't you, Doug?
You would think, right? But then again, we're not. Yes, yes. Look, I'm 100% behind you and I'm beside you, and I'm 100% in agreement with you. But in my view, what we're lacking right now is we are lacking integrity and character, and quite frankly, the realization, and I can't stress this enough, the realization by people in those positions where they can make a difference that we are fighting a spiritual battle. This is a battle against evil, against the devil himself, against the hell coming on earth. This is that battle, and you better saddle for battle, as I have often said, and be prepared. And you know what? You better have the stones by way of prayer and the armor of God to go out there and to really do what you need to do. That's my take on the way. And it, whether it's, and somebody in the chat said something about the Epstein and this topic are closely related. I agree with that for reasons that would take a longer time than we have, because there are things that are happening at the globalist, if you will, level that are so intertwined in the blackmail and of course the boy, if we, you mentioned it earlier in one instance, the slow roll of the exposure as to not to avoid alerting people. And then on the flip side of that, Dr. Yaden mentioned the slow death as opposed to, like, you know, all of a sudden mass extinction of half a generation or whoever.
Well, Doug, inside detectives, if either one of us is going to kill the people, we wouldn't do it all at once. We'd do it incrementally so as not to expose what was going on. Make it look like, oh, it's just a normal deal. Just people are dying, and people always die, as opposed to making it really, really obvious, which it should be obvious from what I know.
Exactly. And the other element I don't think is talked about enough is we're looking at true psychopaths. Now, obviously, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose crap. Okay. I can't even diagnose what's wrong.
All Americans are amateur psychologists, but go ahead.
Right. Right. But when you're dealing with a psychopath, I was talking to somebody because, of course, I'm like you, you know, trained in different disciplines within the investigative field, taking behavioral analysis courses and such, recalling that now. I remember saying something like, I don't think I've ever met a psychopath in the instructor during this course. And this was a federal course. Said, oh, you have. Yes, you have. And I thought about that for a second. We all have met or know of psychopaths. We just didn't recognize them. And that's something, John, I think that people, psychopaths are attracted to positions of power, such as police departments, authoritarian positions. And right. we all have to realize that they create a very dangerous environment for us, we the unwashed masses. I'm just saying. But go ahead, sir.
Well, right. And in my career, I've run across only a couple of psychopaths when it came to murderers. Two come to mind. One was a young man who he had three goals in life. One was to make love to a woman, accomplished. The second was to jump out of an airplane in the Army. He was in the Army 2 weeks. And the third was to murder somebody. Of the three, he was able to accomplish. And he did murder a young couple. He went out with the intent to find victims, which he did. He got them out of the car, tied their hands, stabbed them, and shot them just for the pure pleasure of murdering somebody.
Whoa. Wait a second. So you're telling me you knew a guy that had three goals in life, right?
Right. He was a client, yeah.
A client.
Right.
So I would help him with the jumping out of an aircraft. I would help him with that before he had a chance to do the murders or the other thing with a woman. So right. Because look, man, okay,
wow. A second, which in my opinion was pure evil. A young woman, she was 19. She had a child out of wedlock. Her parents kicked her out of the house. Her grandparents took her in. They were providing everything, food, shelter, clothing, space for the baby. And this young lady convinced her 19-year-old boyfriend that if he murdered grandma and grandpa, that they would grandma and grandpa's assets.
Oh, yeah. I've had two similar cases.
She set up the whole thing. She acquired the firearm. She told the boyfriend where to set up to do the ambush to murder grandma and grandpa, which he did. They put grandma and grandpa into large black trash bags, put them in the trunk of grandma and grandpa's Buick, and took off for Florida with grandma and grandpa's credit cards, dumping off the bodies in a cornfield in southern Illinois. It took the police about 6 or 7 days to catch up with them using the credit cards in Florida. And here's where it gets worse. Prosecuting attorney had enough evidence to convict both of these young people for first-degree murder. No doubt whatsoever. No doubt. The young man was my client, by the way, in the public defender's office. They gave the young lady who I interviewed, she was living in a halfway house down in the city. They gave her a get out of jail free card in exchange for her testimony.
Of course.
This young woman was pure evil.
You know what I call that? I call that laziness, but go on.
Well, if there's anything such as evil, that's what this young woman was.
Yeah. Yeah,
didn't serve one day in jail, not one day. And the young man, I don't know if he's still locked up or not. We didn't have the death penalty at the time. This would have been in the late 70s. And I don't know what his status was, but not that I care. But that's what happened. It was certainly a miscarriage of justice, to say the least. And I'm sure you've seen somewhere.
You know, if you don't mind, just straying a little bit, because that's what I do. And hey, it's my show. By the way, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. You got to listen to his show every morning, every weekday morning. Go to thelibertyman.com, and there you can drill down archives and shows that haven't even happened yet you can listen to. No, I'm kidding, but you know what I mean. But thelibertyman.com. And certainly check out. And folks, look, we're all in a world of hurt, okay? Me, now, I can't speak for John, but we're in a world of hurt in terms of just trying to stay on the air and survive. Our bills to stay on the air are just, oh, God. So here's what I want everyone to do is support the people who they listen to and they believe in and they receive their information and become enriched from. And folks, don't be information collectors. Anyone can be an information collector. Be someone who can listen to John, listen to this show, listen to us together, and don't collect the information. Process it and work on it and use it to your advantage. That's a big thing. But I'm going to share this. So thelibertyman.com, I'm going to share this with you, John.
Okay.
Now you got me. Back in 1988, and people, you know, what the hell are you going back? But there were some things that happened to me that were just incredible. My wife at the time and myself, we were friends with a couple up here, and we vacationed with them and their two children. And, we just had a good time. I mean, they were salt of the earth people. The gentleman's name, because he's still alive, and he was a bank manager for a bank up here. And, I had seen him just a short time before, and he's sitting at the bank and he gets a phone call. It's from his wife, and it was a mechanical recording. And she was taken. She said, I was kidnapped. And, unless you pay X amount of dollars, they're going to kill me. They. Okay.
Right.
And I remember this. It's so heartbreaking. She was executed, and she was executed probably by the time that the first call came in. And it just hurts my guts to even think about this, but that it was the perpetrator. And the perpetrator didn't act alone. He acted with his wife. They were turned down for a loan my friend, I got to be so careful because I don't really want to give too much away. But my friend, who was the manager of the bank, turned him down for a loan. So he kidnapped his wife, kidnapped the bank manager's wife, executed her, but had said something earlier too about being able to shoot someone in the brain and allow them to live. Okay, you talk about psychopaths, but allow them to live and die a slow death, you know, being aware. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is after this happened and after the arrest of that man, his wife, the perpetrator's wife and the co-conspirator in this case, would put personal messages in the newspaper to others in order to kill or to have killed the husband, the widower, that is, as well as the FBI agent involved in the investigation and the DA here. She happened, I remember being in Cleveland. I was called back to my office for a special meeting. I got back to my office, and who's sitting in my office but the co-conspirator wanting our agency to investigate the widower. I don't know if that made sense or not, because I'm trying not to give much information away, but I'll tell you what, that was one of the worst days of my life back then, to think that this woman, this evil piece of crap, was sitting that close to me.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and what I reference this in my book coming out, but because I lived through that. But you know, John, it's like you and I have seen so much. And the only reason, I guess one of the reasons I brought this up is because the evil that's out there, and she was ultimately arrested and thrown in jail, but not for long enough. The evil that's out there, brother. And you're talking about, you know, that psychopath that you had in that you had in your office. I don't know. Do you think people understand the reality of what we have dealt with and even today are dealing
with? Well, for talking about is they only were from movies and TV shows and reading novels as opposed to firsthand. It's reality is far different than watching a movie.
And I'll tell you what, you know, it's fiction is, I think the only reason fiction exists is because the truth is too unpalatable. You know, I don't know, but I know what you've seen. I know what you've dealt with. And, this on a larger scale, to bring this back into the discussion, on a larger scale, I think this is what the American people or all of us in the West are dealing with. This kind of psychopathy, this kind of madness. And it's so evil that our brain, I don't think many people's intellects could, that's not to disparage anyone, but it's difficult to really comprehend the evil that's out there. Does that make sense? I mean,
it does. It does make sense. Would you like to hear about some police corruption?
Why not?
Okay. It's warm weather. I'm doing a surveillance in the city of St. Louis, and I'm sitting on a street watching the subject at his house, and I get there at 7 a.m. It's a 12-hour surveillance at 7 to 7 p.m. And I notice that the house where I'm sitting, about 8 o'clock or so, a car would, somebody go to the door, they'd be there 3 to 5 minutes and gone. 15, 20 minutes later, same thing. After that happened about 4 or 5 times, I realized, from a drug house. So I spent the next 10 hours writing down the time, description, the license plate of every vehicle that stopped there. Uh-huh. And it wasn't much going on. The surveillance was pretty much a big zero, nothing going on at the house I was watching. So when my tour of duty was over for the surveillance, this is in about 1986 or so, 87, along in there. No cell phone, at least. And I looked up the number for the of St. Louis City Police Precinct, where I was located, and I called that number and asked for the watch commander.
Uh-huh.
And I identified myself as, I'm John Moore, a private detective. I got a legal pad full of vehicle descriptions, time, license plates. Everybody stopped at this drug house all day long. Where do you want me to bring it to? This is the response. Oh, John, we got everybody out looking for a guy that's stabbing people. We don't have anybody to spare to take your information.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Now, the St. Louis City Police Department has not quite 2,000 men and women.
Okay.
Quite 2,000. And I was incredulous. I said, what?
Man, okay.
So I called the day and went home, told my wife what happened. Now, here's the corruption at a higher level. I ran for Congress in 1996. And I'm going door to door in this neighborhood.
You ran. I didn't know this. You ran for.
I ran for U.S. Congress.
Congress. Okay.
In 1996 against Dick Gephardt. There was another part to that where my campaign was, which is a different story. So I'm at this house. This guy's doing yard work. It's a beautiful sunny spring day, and in our conversation, he says, I was a DEA field agent for 20 years before I retired. I said, really? He says, yeah. He says, every drug addiction assignment we got, once we third level above this peddler, yeah, we're all reassigned every time for 20 years.
Wow.
Now, what he told me and what he confirmed was that once you got third level above the street dealer, you start bumping into people connected to the U.S. government, which is why they were shut down every drug interdiction program for 20 years.
Yep. Okay. I'm right there with you.
A bit more personal. A friend of mine who was in Vietnam, we got to be friends after Vietnam. He was a special forces guy down the Delta where I was. The same time I was there, we never met in Vietnam. We got to be very dear friends as fellow veterans in the 19th. He passed on, but he's getting ready to leave Vietnam. And before he leaves, he's a brown paper bag full of $100 bills, U.S. currency. And he says, "What's this for?" And the guy, "Bob, what do you think all trips to Cambodia were for anyway?"
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So a bag full of $100 bills in 1968 was a lot of money.
Yeah. To me, it still is. But back then, oh, my goodness.
Oh, some serious money. A brand new Jaguar sports car, full sticker price was $5,000.
Oh, jeez, back then, yeah.
Yeah, and a nice house was maybe $20,000, and a really nice house that would go for $500,000 now would be about $36,000 back in 1960.
But see, and again, this goes back to like the opening. I believe things like this are still happening.
Of course they are.
In fact, not just still, but even deeper and harder and bigger, involving people that, you know, I think back at the Reagan White House. Reagan maybe was disconnected from what was going on, but the midnight tours of the kids, the young kids for sex at the White House made big. In fact, the Washington Post reported on this front page. I think it was back in 88 or something, or 90 maybe. I don't know. But this, things like this are still going on. I got to ask you a question. The closest you came to, kind of reminiscing a little bit, but, do you have any close calls in the field when you were in the field investigative work?
Okay, investigative work, not Vietnam. Okay. Back in 73, a lot of cattle rustling going on. And I went to do a surveillance in cattle country down in southern Missouri. The cameras we had then were primitive. They were 8 millimeter, sometimes 16 millimeter. Real cameras, not video,
right?
That had very limited telephoto capability. So I have my tiger fatigues. Actually, it was two photographs on my website with me wearing the same tiger fatigues, at least the older one. And I went and got a topographical map. I had my lensatic compass, and I parked my vehicle a mile away from the subject's cattle ranch, and I to the woods to get a video film. It was no film of this guy doing things he swore under oath he could. So the first 2 days I got some excellent video, and I report to my supervisor at the end of the day. It's John, we want you to get close-ups, because that camera, you know, it had no telephoto capability of any consequence. But I said okay. So
now, I just want to tell people back then, okay, we didn't have the toys that are available now. Okay. What John's talking about, I mean, I remember the VCR that came in two, or the video camera that came in two pieces. You had a sling, a big thing over
with
your back.
Cable. Yeah.
Yeah. And the cable, and then the camera, and the telephoto properties were shit. And, but anyway, so
well,
appreciate
what
he's, yeah, appreciate what he's saying. You've got to appreciate what John's saying. Go ahead.
I literally crawled through the field up to the fence of this guy's house, and hoping he would come out and do something. So he came out, and he starts working on a swing set, I believe, or maybe it was a piece of farm equipment. And I'm literally 20 feet away from this guy's, and everything was going real good until his teenage daughter came out with a beagle.
Yeah.
And so the beagle starts sniffing at me and it starts barking. Well, so I had no choice except to get up and run. It was about 200 yards from where I was to where my car was parked. And this guy's yelling, "Stop running." I get to my, what was it? A 1968 Rambler sedan, V8 automatic. As I'm up, and he pulls up next to me with a 44 Magnum held in his daughter's hands, pointed at me. And I just sit there. I got the engine running. And this guy, oh, by the way, he had one arm. So he has the daughter, hands him the pistol, and I put it in drive and lay down and driving off. He shoots the pistol at me, hit it in her window, and then the chase began. I found out that that 1968 Rambler would go 105 miles an hour. It would not go 106. It wouldn't go 106. And he eventually gave
now,
up.
But holy crud,
we went
man.
Through a small town. And he didn't have a way to call the police, thank goodness. And actually, I would have hoped the police would have came. That would have been a good idea. I kept up that speed until I felt I was safely away from him.
Which would have been like two towns away, but go on.
Yeah, well, another incident, I was wanting to interview a witness on a criminal case. He refused to talk to me, and he got his buddy was driving, and I followed him to his home and was sitting there, and he came out with a pistol, and I had my .38 in my hand, didn't see it, and he told me to leave, and I thought, well, maybe I better leave, so I left. And
otherwise, gunplay would ensue. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. One more question, though. What was the law? So you've done surveillance, as I have. I think I might have you beat in this one area. The longest surveillance you've done, consecutive hours, the longest surveillance you've ever done.
Well, when it came to most of these were injury cases. We only did daytime surveillance because we couldn't get any video at night.
Okay.
So typically it would be daytime only, typically a 12-hour shift.
Okay. Because I worked a case as an operational asset for the DOJ back in the day, and mine was 40 hours. And I tell you, after the 40 hours, I was seeing monkeys. I didn't smell too good, and my car was a mess. So,
I bet.
Yeah, you know, so, but anyway, but 12 hours, man, that's a long stretch by any means.
The detective agency I worked for did contract work for the FBI that they either couldn't do or didn't want to do. They never told us which cases were the FBI. We didn't know that, but we knew that some of them were. Cause we had a former FBI. I worked with two former FBI guys with this detective agency. One had been a surveillance operative for the FBI. I had to retrain them all over again to do it our way as opposed to the FBI way. And
The FBI way sucks. Who taught these people?
Well, they got resources.
Back in the day, I don't know.
Well, they got resources that typically don't exist in the private sector. Surveillance vehicles and overhead aircraft and deep pockets, deep resources.
Yeah, but whereas you crawling through, you know, doing a belly crawl with an old style camera, okay, again, back in the day, that's how you cut your teeth, in a sense, on surveillance. And I think that says a lot, because when you take the toys away from people, again, you've got to be, in my view anyway, you've got to be...
The mission has to come first.
It does. And you've got to use ingenuity. And you've got to think for yourself. You don't have the back then, you weren't able to put a drone up or, put a spy cam up in a tree or something. You know, you had to do it for yourself. So it says
right.
a lot, you know. But anyway, reminiscing is good, because I think it puts in perspective where we are today. And it gives us a chance just to shoot the you know what. So anyway,
Well, these are firsthand stories from men who've actually been there, done that, got the T-shirt, as they say.
Yeah.
As opposed to the fiction we see. Murder case is solved in a while. Well, it's, I never worked a murder case that took less than a year myself.
Well, now you're talking, of course, on the defense side.
On the defense side, right.
Yeah, yeah. And
occasionally, only a couple, two, three times I was working with the police because they knew the wrong guy had been arrested.
Okay, all right. Because I did a lot with the prosecutor and the police and stuff. So I was on the going after the bad guy kind of stuff. And you were too, on the other side.
I can tell you this from personal experience. Every man, without exception, every man in the confidence of my relationship with him, with me being on, every man who told me he was innocent and somebody else did it, I proved that he was innocent and I did find a guy that did it.
See, there you go. I mean,
and that rarely happens. Most criminal defendants don't get the kind of help provide. They simply don't have the resources to do it.
And that's a sad, okay, that's a very sad commentary that is relative today, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners, a lot of our viewers out there, you know, we're just average people and we don't have the money. I mean, think today, if you're charged with a crime, and folks, believe me, you can be charged with a crime. This is why I mentioned, for example, that Karen Reed trial in Massachusetts. If you understand everything that happened with that whole process, you talk about police and prosecutorial corruption. To me, when you look at the evidence, you look at the actions, you look at, in fact, when you look at the entire court proceedings, plural, you could, that's a masterclass in police corruption. So, sadly, today, if you are charged and you're just an average person, you've got to rely on a broken judicial system with a half-assed prosecutor, defense attorney, a lot of times, not all the time, but many times, that don't have people like John Moore at their disposal. So, just saying.
Well, I've seen this happen. The police decide who the murderer is, and they make the evidence fit. And disregard and don't even look for anything else. There's no doubt, because I've seen it firsthand once again, that there's innocent men and women convicted of murder who have no involvement whatsoever. Not in a little bit. One murder case I worked, the 18-year-old boy, not terribly bright. He would wear caps when it was 90 degrees outside. He cut the grass and helped. Who lives in a house behind him in a small town, Missouri, Bon Terre, Missouri, is public record, so it doesn't matter. She was found beaten to death with a kitchen stool. Everybody in the neighborhood, including the police, in a small town, a couple thousand people, they all knew that this young man did work for this lady. So they brought him in. He's scared to death, not a terribly bright kid. And he admitted being Dave, she's murdered. That's enough. Charge of bar with murder. First degree murder. The attorney who I worked with on some other cases brought me in. My investigation took nearly a year. It was about 10 months before I was 200 miles away at the Hallmark Card Hotel there in Kansas City, 200 miles away, the man who in turn knew who the two criminals were because the two murderers were at a party bragging about murdering this woman. So I recorded the conversation, went back to it and turned over to the prosecutor. He dropped the charges against our guy and filed charges against the two men who really did do the murder. Now, the young man spent a year of his life in jail for something he had no involvement with whatsoever. None. Zero. Nada. And easily, if not for my effort, easily could have been convicted of first-degree murder and spent the rest of his life in jail. We had no death penalty at the time. This is not an isolated incident. These things happen all the time.
That's, again, that's a statement that I think people really have to understand.
The police weren't looking for another guy.
Of course not. No, why should they?
Almost no defense attorneys have the resources or have the money to bring in somebody like myself with my expertise. Almost none of them do.
Right, right. And again, that's where we should not necessarily be in this position today. We have allowed ourselves, I think, to be in this position. And that's a, to me, that's a sin, because a lot of innocent people are being, are the prey of a corrupted police structure. Now, there are good police officers out there, but they're getting fewer and fewer, in my view. And it's a sad thing. I just happened to think of this back about, I think, 18 years ago now. It was like 05. I don't know. I guess that would be 20. Now it was 07, 08. I remember I had to testify against a guy in Rochester, New York, and I still can't believe this happened. And there were a few things that happened before I was scheduled to testify. I think I was scheduled to, the hearing started at 9. Anyway, a few things happened before like 8 in the morning, where I was looking at the, defendant and, just from afar, from surveillance, just to make sure that I had things right. Anyway, I went to the courthouse. I parked like a block away because of the parking. I remember walking across the street, and I look up and I see this big honking Cadillac. I'm telling you, it was like, you know, one of the boats from back in the day.
Right.
Barreling down the street, and I'm crossing the street toward the courthouse, and this guy, it was the defendant. I'm like, holy, you know. And I was carrying a folder with my papers in it, and I looked, and I'm thinking, man, if I don't, and I remember thinking, if I don't get out of the way, I'm gonna get hit. And this guy was like coming right at me, and I ran. And that sucker almost ran me down. But here's the thing. There was a cop that was sitting in his car down the road, half a block away.
Right.
Saw this happen. So as I am getting, I'm sitting in the courtroom now, and this cop walks into the courtroom, taps me on the shoulder, and he says, "Is that the guy?" And I said, basically, I'm like, "Where'd you come from?" And yeah, that's the guy that tried to run me over.
Right.
I've never seen this happen before.
He arrested him on the spot.
Went over there, slapped the cuffs on him. The judge was like, "What the hell's going on in my courtroom? What do you, you know?" I demand, and it's like, oh man, oh my gosh, it was just something to see. I don't know why I brought that up, except it. I don't know. It was just, to me, it was kind of funny, because this guy tried to run me down. And then I was going to be compelled to testify at that, against him at that trial. And, I get all these papers in the mail, PFA, you know, on my behalf by the state. So there are some good cops out there, and there are some, you know, back then anyway, but what the hell? I'll shut up now. I don't know.
Well, we got about 8 minutes left or so, Doug.
I don't know. I lost track. I lost control of this from the beginning. 7 minutes, 6 minutes. How about that?
Okay. Well, let's summarize here. I mean, we've gone some interesting directions. I hope discussion informative both. But getting back to the main topic at hand, which is the worst crime in human speak, the consequences of the COVID-19 vaccination clot shot, which continues. It's not over. And once the vaccinations stop, the consequences will continue for decades into the future. A 3-year-old who is injured now will be suffering 6, 7, even 8 decades into the future from what their parents did to them. Anybody who has, and of course, most unvaccinated people now are children. There is still optional for parents to get the child the COVID vaccine if they choose to. It's not recommended, but they can choose. They can do so if they choose to. And we need to make people aware of consequences so they don't get any more boosters. If they already got the shots, you got, the more at risk you're putting yourself. So the Mike Yaden final warning video at my website will give people the educational material they need to make informed decisions. And, of course, my show is Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 Central Time, 8 to 11 Eastern, at Republic Broadcasting, and linked, live shows linked, and the archives or video archives are linked to my website at thelibertyman.com. We have a lot of work ahead of us to preserve our, I'm not 100% happy with President Trump, but I'm mostly happy with what he's done so far. If nothing else, he's given, a delay of at least 4 years, maybe longer. J.D. Vance or some similar patriot can be elected president to delay, obviously, and screw up the plans of, that main mission is, along with Bobby Kennedy, who will eventually bring out the truth about vaccines. Bobby Kennedy says the following. He's in favor of safe and vaccines, but what he never does is tell us what he considers a safe and effective vaccine, which just tells me all I need to know about him. None of them are safe and effective. And that's part of the education, is letting people know there's no such thing as a safe and effective vaccine. Not exist. So even if you're convinced the COVID vaccine is bad, which they are, you need to be convinced also that all vaccines are harmful. No ifs, ands, or buts. All vaccines are harmful. We now know that the United States is great record keepers. We now know the healthiest men, women, and children in this country are those who received any vaccine of any kind. They have no chronic diseases, almost none, almost no allergies, almost none, compared to the general population, which is really, really sick, Doug.
You said it. And folks, look, I don't listen to a lot of programs. John Moore's show is one to listen to. Bookmark thelibertyman.com. Make sure you follow him. Make sure you support John and support his efforts through his sponsors or through his products, through whatever. But support John. He deserves it. And there it is on your screen, thelibertyman.com, John Moore. And he's seen a lot, done a lot, been there, done it, has the scars to prove it. And I appreciate him and all the work he's done and is doing. We have about a minute left.
Well,
minute and a half left.
You touched on it briefly, and we usually wrap up our segments with the following. Ultimately, this is a spiritual battle. The details and the nuances do not appear to be spiritual at all. But ultimately, what we're dealing with is a spiritual battle, and we need to keep that in mind. I pray daily with my wife, our republic to be saved. I end my show every day with a quick prayer. And I've got a pastor the other week that, because it's a very thoughtful prayer. Dr. Horowitz is on with me once a week, does a very thoughtful prayer also. We need to keep that foremost. It is a spiritual battle here, and we need to just keep that always in the forefront, Doug.
You're 100% right. We are engaged in a spiritual battle. And if people don't understand, and I know our audience does, but if people fail to realize the depth of the spiritual battle, the depth of evil, the depravity that exists out there, we're not going to understand how to fix this. We have to pray, put on our armor of God and fight. And that's why our opening is that way, because we do have to fight. It's up to us, because ain't no one coming to save us, I'm afraid. I believe that.
My Saturday video podcast has that same video of Ray Austin saying fight. I didn't know you did it, but we both came to the same conclusion independently, didn't we?
Independently, yes. And, you know, it's a collective spirit, though. And I think all of us out there, the people who have Folks, if you're still listening and still watching at this point, you're part of the fight. And John, I'm afraid we're out of time. God bless you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.